I am.
Okay. Welcome, everybody. August 11th, Planning Commission. Are all commissioners present there in the room, by the way?
Yes, Elena's there.
Okay,
yes.
So commissioners present, Matt Cochran, Elena Hughes, Tina Carlson, Colleen Thompson, John Varanth, and I don't know, is Shelley Price Gibson on? Is our?
I've not seen that she's on.
Okay, so, and then our clerk, of course, Peg Smith. We'll start with approving the agenda. I'll make a motion to approve the agenda for tonight.
I'll second.
Who was that?
Colleen Thompson, I'll second it.
Okay, is there any changes, anything we need to know? Or is it good? All right, then. All in favor of approving the agenda, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
John Varanth, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Okay, thank you. And next on the agenda is approving the July 14th minutes. I'll make a motion to approve those. Is there a second?
Second that, it's Elena.
Okay, any amendments, discussions, changes?
Yes, I sent some corrections to Peg. I think you got those by email.
Yes, they're on the version that's highlighted that you see on the screen. So both Elena and John had some corrections. They both got added. So that's what's on the web right now.
Okay. So all in favor of approving the minutes with these corrections? Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
John Varanth, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
I was absent.
Right, gotcha. So Colleen okay. Can't vote for the minutes, okay. Thank you.
Right, okay, thank you. Okay, number three on our item today is in lieu of trying to learn more about housing options, we asked Lee last minute, I just realized, to address the idea of performance standards for housing, if that's a possibility, and also his knowledge on deed restrictions. So I don't know how much time you need, Lee, but if you could give us what you do know about this so we have some more to chew on here, that'd be great.
I think that I want to speak briefly and see what questions there are. And I want to focus more on deed restrictions because I think they're what's pivotal in many ways to people thinking about this. And I want to have you all make a distinction in your minds about these issues. There's zoning, right? There are the town regulations for land use. That includes subdivision regulations, whatever. Those regulations can set up opportunities for landowners. In other words, if I have a parcel of land in Boulder and I would like to create some housing, then I have a box within which I can work. And that would be where we write performance standards. And you've seen a draft of performance standards for lots in the minor subdivision ordinance that we discussed and did not take any action on. And we can come back to those ideas, but the important connection I want you to get here is that, okay, this town sets up an opportunity. It's up to the landowner to take advantage of that opportunity, right? And the landowner's relationship with the town at that point is governed by the law of contracts. Just like if you go buy a car, engage in a real estate transaction, or create a business partnership, what we're talking about here is a contract between the landowner and Boulder Town. And that contract will reflect what the performance standards ask it to reflect, which could be a commitment to maintain the price of housing with a modest adjustment for inflation into the future, rather than allowing it to rise speculatively. And this would discourage flipping the property. This would discourage people who are doing anything except trying to invest in living in the community. It would mean that those units are not very likely to become second homes or be Airbnb'd. And in fact, those behaviors could be prohibited by the contract that comes with this particular project. It would also commit the landowner, in many cases, perhaps all cases, to preserving a certain amount of open space. And that would require the landowner to record a conservation easement on the land that is 3 million open in exchange for the incentive to build some housing, at least some portion of which would be affordable. So really, what the performance standards would do and what you would end up with is a contract, one development, one subdivision at a time, that says this is how much and specifically where open space will be protected. In exchange for the protection of that open space, the developer will be allowed to increase the density of development in order to make homes more affordable. Got a cat here. Oh, there's Mr. Zap. Zap, come on. And you would have a deal. And these deals are written up all the time. I'm sitting about a mile from where there is such a deal where the developer agreed to, in this particular case, a little unusual to actually give the town some land fee simple. It was land that really wasn't of any valuable, any real value to the developer. It's a marsh. And he also gave the town some money to help replant the degraded vegetation in that marsh, at least to get that planting started. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to tie a lot of things together. You're trying to have open space, the provision of housing, at least some portion of which is affordable, and the creation then of a project, a subdivision, and the performance standards put a box around that and say, here's how much open space, here's what proportion of the housing needs to be affordable, and here's the level of affordability that we're talking about. All those things would have to be specified.
Yeah,
I'm going to finish very quickly here. I could write up those performance standards in a couple of days. And it would be a waste of my time and yours, because until there is not a consensus necessarily, but some strong agreement among the people of Boulder that you need to do this, any number that I throw out, say that I said, oh, well, we'll give the landowner an incentive of 5 times the current density. Well, that would immediately become the focus of conversation, right? Rather than the big idea. And so I want to resist specificity at this point in time until there is a better agreement. And I will connect this to something else that's on the agenda, which is fire hydrants. And that's not really a loose connection. Whatever you do with fire hydrants is going to affect the pattern of development or whatever you don't do. But the question, we need to tie these questions together and say, well, having a water source is fabulous, but if there are no volunteer firefighters, does it matter? And the answer to that is no, it doesn't matter. There has to be somebody who has at least some training, who has the ability to get in the apparatus and go as quickly as possible, who has the ability to, everything that you do whether you can have all the apparatus, all the fire trucks you want, you can have all the water you want, only works if there's people. And so when we talk about housing and how we're going to get housing, or if we're going to get more housing options and possibilities in Boulder, one of the things we have to say is, will that contribute to having better fire protection? And I think the answer is almost certainly, in some long run sense, yes, it would. So I want to aim towards the housing forum that you're talking about with a sense of connection to the big picture of all these pieces. And with that, I will stop and see what questions or comments people have.
Yeah, so just thank you for that. And this is basically a technical question. And first of all, I agree with you. The Planning Commission is just assessing all the different ideas, and we're trying to figure out what to bring to the housing forum. And so, you know, this is one that we just need to know what our options are. Now, when it comes to performance standards, this is something that would technically be a part of the subdivision ordinance, and housing would be a part of the performance standard, is what you're saying.
Well, okay. It would be in two pieces, like the commercial piece that we worked on. Again, you got to think about that commercial checklist.
Yeah.
Part of it's going to be in zoning, because zoning is where you set the number of units that are allowed. And right now in Boulder, with teeny exceptions, you're allowed one dwelling unit plus an accessory dwelling for every 5 acres. And zoning, that's in the zoning, and that's where that would have to be changed. The way to think of it, I think simplest, is that zoning sets the big rules, okay? The subdivision regulations give you a process, a step-by-step sequence of how you apply those rules to a subdivision. And the subdivision regulations usually also set details, which could include fire hydrants, right? Among many other small details. We've talked at great length about how you get access to subdivision lots, whether through actual streets or through easements. And I think that decision has been vetted out, and we're in a comfortable place with how that looks. But that's the type of details that the subdivision part of the ordinance addresses. The density question, the number of units, that's going to be in zoning. So you're going to be modifying, if you do anything at all, you're going to be modifying the zoning ordinance, which is relatively easy, and the subdivision ordinance, which, given the way it's set up right now, is more work.
Great. Any other questions from the commission for Lee about performance standards?
This John here. Couple things. I think, you know, we do have some examples. Moab, for example, is far ahead of us both in how severe their housing crisis has been and how proactive they've been. So we have some good examples around the state to look at. And I think, you know, names of people, names of experts is going to be very helpful in bringing our housing forum together. I think we have some leads, some people who are very familiar with what Grand County has been doing. But any suggestions from you, Lee, would be very welcome there. One other thing I did want you to expand a little bit about how the process for a conservation easement works, since our cluster ordinance has some specificity about that. And I'm not sure that everyone is aware that it's more than just writing down ag area on the plat.
Well, that's worth following up on a little bit. There is a Utah state statute that governs the use of conservation easements. And so whatever anybody does has to comply with that statute. It's pretty straightforward, and people impose these easements all the time. So there's nothing new that has to be invented. You just have to go through the steps. Again, we're back to that distinction that I was trying to make between what the zoning allows and what a particular owner ends up doing. The zoning sets a box within which a contract is written. And that contract would include a conservation easement. And it's important to think about conservation easements in their fullness. You know, usually they're put on a piece of land by people who live there. And so they don't prohibit any residential use, right? People are already living there. A lot of times people will reserve a lot or the ability to add a dwelling unit. And the uses, the slate of uses that the conservation easement allows versus those which it prohibits has to be spelled out working with the family or the individual who's going to impose the easement. And in this case, where the easement gives one access to a zoning incentive, then you have to spell out how that works too. These things get, I don't want to imply that they're overly complicated because they aren't, but they take time for people to sit down and get through the process and understand exactly what is and what is not permitted. And there are people in Utah, there are attorneys in Utah who do these things, and people can have access to those people as private counsel and get it done. So, you know, there's a process, a somewhat complicated process that has to be gone through, but it's spelled out in the statutes as to what has to happen with the conservation easement. The contract, the nature of the contract with the town is going to be spelled out in the performance standards. And, you know, to give you a vision, imagine somebody who's got 40 acres of irrigated land. And in addition to that 40 acres of irrigated land has some dry land that is arguably suitable for the building of housing. One of the things you could say, and again, I don't want to be tied to specific numbers here, I'm just trying to give you an example. You could say, well, right now on that 40 acres, you could chop it up into 8 pieces, right? 5 acres per. If you had to have a street or something in there, maybe you'd only get 7 lots out of it. It depends on the configuration of the property and what access it has. Everything's a little bit individual. And the town zoning might say, well, that's fine, but if you're willing to make 3/5 of those housing units perpetually affordable, you can have 24 instead of 8. Okay. And that would still be on fairly large lots. It would not be an urban or even suburban, too suburban an environment. And depending on how the clustering of houses, the design of the project on the land, you could get a pretty good result with that. And that's, again, setting aside the specific numbers, which we don't want to get people hung up on right now. That's the type of vision that I think you need to ask people about it at the forum, is to say, okay, are you willing to make this trade-off?
Okay. Any other questions from the commission around performance standards before we move on to deed restrictions?
And then the open space is either part of the full subdivision or is a separate piece onto by a farm or whatever.
Well, that's a really good question, because it's important to point out that I could be a landowner who has land in 2 different parts of Boulder. And I could have some irrigated land in one place and some dry land that we would prefer to have the housing on in another place. And we would allow the density to move to that non-contiguous parcel. There's nothing that prevents you from doing that. If we wanted to go another step, adds more complexity, you can let 2 landowners work together to do this, right? And you could transfer the right to develop off of my irrigated land to your dry land. And again, this would all be a set of contracts. And in this case, there would be a contract between 2 landowners, as well as an agreement with Boulder Town. there's a lot of flexibility in how you set this up. There's a lot of potential for creativity in how you set this up. As long as you're clear about the goals of what you're trying to accomplish, right? And what we're trying, with the vision that I'm suggesting, is that we're linking the protection of open space, particularly agricultural open space, but it doesn't have to be agricultural, with the provision of housing, and particularly the provision of housing that is perpetually affordable to people with ordinary working incomes. And that would be, that could be a very beautiful combination in Boulder. It's just a matter of being creative enough to do it.
Right. So maybe now's the time to segue into deed restrictions, since that speaks to that vision.
Right. Well, you know, the deed restrictions are recorded. And there's no difference in recording a deed restriction. There's no technical or legal difference in recording a deed restriction that sets housing on a particular lot to be perpetually affordable. No difference technically than recording a utility easement on the same parcel. They obviously say different things, but they're the process in the final analysis, the process is identical. And the town has to, give people a clear path to this, which I don't think the existing subdivision regulations do. You could do it, but there isn't a clear path. There isn't a 1-2-3 sequence for people to see, hey, this works. The other thing that the existing subdivision language about clustering doesn't do is provide a sufficient incentive for people to do it. But if you say to me that I can substantially up my potential income, then I might be willing to enter into that agreement, right? That's what we hope, is that there will be someone who owns whatever type of open space you all decide you want to protect. I keep using irrigated lands as the example because I think that the fundamental reality of Boulder is this oasis in the desert. And without the greenness, then you've got a different reality. So the irrigated land stands out to me. But there may be other types of open space that are part or potentially part of the deal as well.
So how specifically does a deed restriction work? What could you write into it? And John, this is a question to you, because you brought that to the table. How are you thinking to use a deed restriction in the guise for affordable housing?
Well, I think this is pretty much what Leah said. We can create incentives, for example, to say that you get extra density if a certain percentage of the subdivision is designated as affordable housing. Our clustering ordinance gives an incentive that you can make lots half as big if you preserve half the area as an agricultural easement. That's our current clustering ordinance. Like Lee says, that really doesn't give you a big incentive, because although it does keep your agricultural field intact, you still get the same number of houses. So we probably have to increase our incentives, but that's a simple one, is to say we give increased density if some percentage are restricted either to people below 80% of the median income, or what other jurisdictions in Utah have done has been to define a local worker, usually somebody employed 30 hours a week or a business owner, and say that it's restricted to be, this is more with rentals, only can be rented to somebody who is a bona fide local worker. So again, we could allow for somebody to put in a fourplex on a property, live in one unit, have three as rentals, but to get those three rentals, he has to agree that two of them are dedicated to local workers. So there are lots of ideas like that that can be throwing out. Like Lee says, I think we need to start with the big picture of solving the housing problem and then look at creating legal structures that incentivize it.
A deed restriction is just a clause in a contract. And the quality of the language, the way it's written, is what determines whether it is successful or not. But within the box that the town creates with its standards, the owner is making a voluntary decision, right, to participate in the opportunity the town has created. The owner is not, as we are discussing this, required to do that. The owner is invited to do that in order to implement the general plan, right, and to provide housing. And so it's a matter of writing a good contract.
Gotcha. So just for public sake and sort of outer clarification, right now, the way I'm hearing it, performance standards and deed restrictions are tools that can be used to create the sort of scenario that we want in Boulder, but we are waiting for this to do this public housing forum in November in order to hear what the town actually wants before we make specific decisions on how we might use performance standards or deed restrictions. That I'm just saying for clarification for everybody.
Yes, yes.
Any other questions for Lee on this subject? Let's see. Yeah, about 10 more minutes here at most.
This is Elena. Lee, I hear you when you say that you want to wait for a little more public support before moving forward on writing standards. What specifically would you like to see? Would you like to see everyone on Planning Commission agree, or the town council, or get some sort of feedback from the town? Or
I think that there's an educational piece in this, right? People need to understand the possibilities. And we can illustrate the possibilities. And the easiest way to do that is in some type of a public forum to get people to sit down and say, look, here's something we could do. What do you think? How would you change that? How would you not change that? We don't know. But they say that the devil is in the details, but really the devil wants you to think about the details, because if you think about the details, you never get to the big picture.
Yeah.
Right. And what we have to have, in my opinion, and I know that John more or less shares this because I've spoken with him about it, we have to have an understanding on the part of enough people in Boulder that this is the route to go before we do too much specific. If we come out and say, you know, in October or November or whenever, and say, hey, we're going to give people a density incentive where they could have one housebreaker instead of one per five, the first thing that will happen is that the town will divide into two camps. There will be those that say, oh, that's great, and those that say, oh, that's awful. Some people will say it's not enough of incentive. Some people will say it's too much. However you want to write it up. The numbers, in the end, the numbers are very important, right? But numbers have an impact on how people talk to each other, is what I'm trying to say, right? And what I hope we could do is to say the people of Boulder understand the connections between open space, housing, and future provision of services, all those things. And that if we have a clear enough understanding of that, and people say, yep, we want to connect these dots, because right now they're not connected, right? You could connect them using the existing subdivision regulations. There's a path, but it's not a very good path. As John pointed out, there is not enough of an incentive to get people to go on that path. And the way the subdivision regulations work is a bit arcane. We could straighten that out, but we need to have people say, yes, connect the dots. I understand that if there is more affordable housing, that there will be EMTs, there will be volunteer firefighters, there will be a workforce for our businesses. I understand that if we just build housing, we're not protecting our open space, so we've got to somehow connect the need for those workers and public services with the need for housing, with the need for open space. We've got to make that connection, which is a big picture connection. We've got to make that clear and then say, Okay, folks, what do you think? Is the Planning Commission, you can't say authorized because that's too formal, but do you all want the Planning Commission to show you how this could work in detail? That's what you want the public to say. And then writing up the details is not actually nearly as difficult as getting that consensus.
Yep.
You know, if people say do this, then we can show them how we could do it. And you can tweak the numbers, right? We might say, well, 5 times the density that's allowed right now isn't enough of an incentive. It's got to be 8. Or we might say 5 times the density that's allowed now is too much. It's only going to be 4. There's a range of choices in there, but all of a sudden the range of choices is clearly a part of a bigger picture instead of numbers that just get everybody fired up and excited. And you can find example after example of people going out to the public with something way too specific and it's shot down. Yeah. Not really because people disagree with the principle, but because setting a number, setting a hard line of one sort or another at the beginning just has a tendency to automatically divide people into 2 camps, for it or against it. And we need to avoid the for it or against it thing until we have everybody understand the connections.
All right. John, again, I think good points. I think the other one, you mentioned the 2 camps, and I think as much as selling people on the merits of the idea is also making it not, making, reassuring people whose biggest asset is their land, that this is not going to be harmful to them, that they should be able to see it as an opportunity to make profit and make the town better, not as a threat. But I wanted to just, a lot of this was discussed about 5 years ago. And I think, Matt, you were attending planning meetings, not as a commissioner then, Helene, I think, was on the commission. And maybe you, Helene, Tina, could talk a little bit about what was done back in the 2017 timeframe and, you know, how we can build on that.
Yeah, I'll start off. I mean, back then, affordable housing was like one of 5 topics, I think. You know, there was general plan vision. I forget all the other ones. And the meetings were very productive. We learned a lot. We gained a lot of information. And as a result, the general plan you see now is one result of that. And it seems like the thing that happened is we didn't get to the affordable housing yet until now. And that's sort of the nature of the beast. That's my experience. Colleen or Tina, you guys were really part of that.
So when we had the forum, I was on the group that we actually came to. I think if I'm not mistaken, it was the first time we came into town. And my group basically talked about, that was the first time that we'd seen John's pictures or papers on how to make Boulder what Boulder wanted through the standards that he had created. And so we did a clustering. He showed us how to do clustering and how to use those pages of standards, which we've created for commercial uses and what's the other one? Commercial standards and the other one. No, it wasn't the RV. I can't think of it, Lee. But anyway, you've helped us.
The campgrounds. But we did campgrounds as well as commercial, and that's all that we've done so far.
Yeah, but we have 2 pages of, anyway, so that's what we did, was learn how to use the standards that Lee Nellis had created. And then it wasn't even a month or two later when Cookie was on that panel, maybe it was a little bit longer, when we were talking about how to create Boulder the way that we wanted to. And Lee started coming at that time to our meetings and helping. I mean, and this is where we are from our group, basically. Do you remember that, Lee?
I do. Well, so we also worked on the home businesses.
Standards, yeah. And
Peg was just reminding everyone, and I thank her for that. That was a part of dealing with the whole idea of commercial, wherever it might be. And, you know, that we got there using the process there. But what I want to point out to you that's a little different here is not the process or not the way that you set up standards. Working together as we did. What's a little different here is that commercial is a simpler, more straightforward question. We didn't have to tie commercial to the bigger picture nearly as much as we have to with housing and public services and open space all tied together. With commercial, what you're trying to do is say, respect the environment, don't bug the neighbors, and make it work, right? It's a rather straightforward thing. And the 20 some odd performance standards that you have now seem to work pretty well in guiding people along that path. There just didn't have to be the same philosophical and political work.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, the point is, John, to answer your question is, we've been doing the work. We just did the easier stuff first, and now we're at the hard one.
Okay, well, I'm in for it. Let's do it.
Okay. Thank you, Lee. Any last questions before I switch gears here?
I have a question. We could probably let Lee go first if that's what you're thinking, but my question is just, the housing group, didn't each group from that have to submit a report? Is it possible that someone has that and we can all look at it?
Yeah, I sent it to you.
Oh, you didn't find it.
Those reports have been circulated around.
It was a group effort.
If I may say one thing before you switch topics,
please.
It's that when you're dealing with details like fire hydrants, make sure you don't forget about the big picture.
Yeah,
great advice. I'm not going to say much more about it than that because I wasn't really invited into the conversation, but it's a teeny little detail from many points of view, and it's okay to resolve details. Sometimes you got to do that, but think about how does this affect all these other considerations that we have when you get to that topic. The other thing I will say is that I would sure like to have a date for the housing forum, partly because I have contacted some potential guest speakers, and it's really hard to say, well, I don't know when it's going to happen, right? If you guys could figure out a date. The other thing is that, you know, now that travel is easier and it looks like I am going to be pretty free this fall, I might want to take a vacation to Boulder for your housing forum. So well,
our tentative date is November 17th right now.
Okay. Okay. Well, I will write that down and I will communicate with somebody about that, a couple of people actually. But
great.
With that, I'll let you guys get on to the fire hydrants and other stuff. If you don't need me anymore.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lee. Really appreciate it. That was helpful. Yeah.
Okay. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
Likewise. Okay, everybody. So next item on the agenda is actually discussing our community housing forum. And I guess first is sort of reports where there are a couple of things I want to do here. So I'm just going to frame it out. So first, I want to hear what you've discovered since our last meeting. And then I think we should probably, legitimize our date, time, place, and hybrid, or how are we going to do it, number one. Number two, I think we should at least make a rough list of some basic topics, given what Lee's talking about. And third, and this is not necessarily the right order, but we need to create a working group with the public to start you know, getting everything in gear so this actually happens. But let's start with reports. I know, Tina, you're working on stuff. Elena, Colleen, what have you, what's happened in the last month?
Okay, this is Tina, I'll start. basically, I've been conferring with John about how this meeting and how to move forward, but I'm thinking that I have some areas of topic and some sites to look at. So it's just been research on basically community land trust part of it. I'm not sure if that's something we will want to pursue, but I have some ideas about that. Just reading what Moab has done, as John pointed out. And then I also have talked to a couple people who might be interested in the community in helping in whatever contact of like Escalante to find out how what their housing project is, and just talking to people who have some ideas about possible scenarios that we might present to the community. So,
great. Yeah. And would those people be valuable on a working team, or you think could be something they might agree to?
I thought that it might be valuable to even split up the different segments that we're going to work on, and then, you know, just ask people in the community to work, you know, either with a couple of us, you know, split it up to do three and two or whatever, and have working committees that happen between meetings so that we can also include those people who are interested in joining us or are interested in taking on some kind of task.
Yeah.
So hopefully about, you know, actually talking to people that might be of help in any kind of project that moving forward.
Right. So I wonder, you know, would you be willing maybe this week to maybe put out a peg board or something to draw in a working committee or you know, I don't know what the right, when I did a working group for the general plan, I think we decided that 5 to 7 people, which means 2 commissioners and the rest is public, was about the right number to actually feel enough people were included, but to also get a lot done. You might have a different idea about that, but I would suggest we set a number and start getting that team together, so to speak, and getting on a work schedule.
I think that as soon as we have our different sections of, you know, a list of, like, you know, topics that we want to research, then yeah, that could be.
Okay. And we'll get to those in a minute here, the topics. Okay. Other sort of reports, what did people do this week, this month?
So this is Colleen. I'm not sure if you guys, I went through the minutes and I didn't really notice. Before I wasn't at the meeting last month, and I had sent you guys a message basically telling you that I had talked to Kate and Figgins about the projects that were going on over in Eswani and Tori, and he gave me the names. Did you get that?
So yes,
we have that information. Charlene Wild is the executive director of the NeighborWorks Mountain Country Home Solutions. They're the ones doing it in Escalante. We could probably get a hold of her. There's also Max Anderson. He's from the Beaver Housing Authority, and they're doing a project over in Torrey.
Okay, so these are possible speakers you're thinking, Colleen?
Well, yeah, I mean, as far as Caden Figgins, I'm sure would be happy to come over and talk about those projects. The interesting thing about those projects are that, you know, the land was set aside, given for those projects, but the projects themselves are $1 million projects. And there's not a whole lot of funding that comes out of the county, let alone the cities for projects like that too. So yeah, those are three people that we could talk to. Caden's, you know, a great person to come over and talk to.
Okay, thank you.
And I can get a hold of him even. I've tried to call, let's see, the Neighbor Works Mountain Country Home Solutions. I've called them several times. They came, approached the city several years ago and were told that the city wasn't interested at that time. So I haven't gotten Charlene Wald to give us a call yet back. I don't know if it's going to take a few calls from maybe other people or whether it would be Caden. But yeah, I'd be happy to get a hold of Caden and ask him about it.
Okay. Well, right now, let's just get that. We'll get the information on the table. And then once we have it all, let's strategize and figure out what the next steps are. Let's see, John or Elena, anything?
Yeah, I have a few things I kind of noticed when I was taking my notes and coming up with my ideas that I kind of have two different categories. The first one being building new housing and the second one being investing in existing housing. So within the umbrella of building new housing, I think it could be interesting to bring in Dave Conine to talk about community rebuilds, and he does a lot of other work with land projects as well. I'm going to meet up with Brad this weekend, who is new to town. I don't know if you've met Brad and Brenda. They're building a place up on the Mesa, and he founded and worked for a land trust for like 30 years. Community land trusts weren't his focus specifically, but he knows about them. And I don't know much about them, so I'm going to talk to him and pick his brain a bit about that. And then in terms of enlisting existing housing, I think it's important to look at options like that as well, and not just always put it on the new developer or new landowner. There is a lot of housing in town that no one lives in currently. If we can try to incentivize people to rent those things out, those units out, I'm not sure exactly how we would do that there. I mean, I've talked about before, an empty home tax, I think, could be an option. There are other ways we might be able to incentivize that. I was also reading the other day about Breckenridge in Colorado. Buys deed restrictions. I was thinking of contacting someone at that. It's called like home help or something. I was thinking of contacting someone there and seeing kind of how they accomplish that. I don't know where the funding from that comes from, because I don't think the town just has that kind of funding. So I'd be curious how they accomplish that. But basically what they do is they buy deed restrictions from existing homeowners. And it seems like typically the type of people that sign up for that are perhaps people who would like the character of their town to stay the same, don't have kids they'd like or someone they'd like to inherit their place, and they'd rather make some money now by having the town basically purchases the deed restriction from them. So they get some amount, it's typically 10% or something of the value of their home. They get it immediately if they agree to never allow it to go above a certain rate or not be sold to someone who doesn't work in town or something like that. So I think those are options instead of always putting the deed restrictions and everything on the new homeowners. We can come up with solutions that people who already have their roots here can try to help out this housing issue as well.
Great. Yeah, no, it sounds good. And I think, you know, one thing we have to keep in mind is that state law is different on what can be done and not done. So like for the second home tax, I think Lee was saying about that, that's something we have to look at and see if what can be done in Colorado and not can't necessarily be done in Utah. So something we need to dive into. Good. Great though. John?
I think most of my topics have been mentioned by the others. And I thank you all for pitching in on this. It's great having to be a teamwork. I think the big one that's been mentioned here, we definitely want somebody to talk about funding at the November meeting. What sources of funds are available in terms of grants, loans, USDA development funds, and so forth? Because that is going to be a key, is how you pay for these ideas. And definitely we want to keep track of what's been done elsewhere in Garfield County. And it might be appropriate to ask our mayor, Judy Drain, to reach out to the county commission and maybe we are tied to that part of the county.
Yeah, great. You know, and you're right. You know, we can't, this talk can't happen without funding, because no affordable housing can happen without funding. Because Garfield County is at a medium, I think, from your report, John, at the moderate income is the standard, the middle. So the other thing, this is a question I have for the commission concerning all of this that comes up a lot for me. And I wonder if you guys might just answer it off the cuff if you have any idea. How much affordable housing does this town actually need?
Well, I was talking to someone who brought up the fact that, you know, it might be important to even consider doing a setting it up so that we have a project like for the community to give as an example to the community as far as the need of housing. And one thing that's come up is that, you know, the school's desperate to get a teacher, and there's, you know, housing is so, there's, you know, people are looking for housing right now, definitely, that are, you know, would either would like to stay here or, you know, would like to come here and work at the school, for instance. And I think that one idea to present would be like, what would need to happen to put a bill or to have housing put on the school grounds for a teacher in particular? And what are all of those, the elements that have to go into that? So we have some kind of idea of, you know, what anything like that would be for, you know, affordable housing that I think the whole community could be back that up as far as that is a need. But right. I don't think there's, you know, I mean, this is not, I think there's a lot of limitations in this community has, including how many homes can be in this community and still have, you know, clean water or have enough water, or, you know, there's a lot of different aspects of how many homes could be. I don't know if you could come up with an exact figure, but there's certainly within, you know, 5-10 right now, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's just important to come up with a basic assessment of what we're looking at. So is we don't need to do more than is necessary. And we obviously don't want to do less. So just something to keep in the background as we go through this exercise, this process.
I don't have a number in mind, but I just want to say, again, I've said it before, but I personally feel like affordable land is more wanted and needed in town than affordable housing.
Right.
Okay, I'll throw out a couple ideas here. You know, affordable land, part of it can be the agricultural easement. So if something is dedicated that has to stay in active agriculture, that does create at least an opportunity for somebody to lease it or whatever and use it without having to come up with the captive line. But to answer Matt's question, I'm going to throw out that we have at least six to 10 shortfall right now. If you look at it, we have a zoning administrator who'd love to move back to town. I think there's 2 openings at the school. We're probably 1 to 2 short on EMT, public safety people in town. Between the stores and the restaurants, I'm sure we have a number of people who are living in tents and temporary housing and couch surfing, that there's 4 to 5 people there that the businesses will hire immediately if they could have somebody living locally and having housing. So that's, you know, and I think, you know, the way to approach it is probably the way that we looked at the residential short-term rentals. You think about it as a fraction of the growth, because although Tina brought up, well, how many houses do we have in town that have clean water? It's also what kind of houses. Lee did that build-out study. And if we ultimately took all the developable land and chopped it into 5-acre lots, we could have 400 investor second homeowners here and the workers.
Right. I think that's a valuable idea. And I think also, as to back up what Elena was saying, one of the part of the equation is, quote, workforce housing. The other part is, affordable land for people who are already here. These are, or affordable opportunities. These are different, in some ways, they're different for full-time residents. In some ways, these are different subjects that need to be addressed. So I'd like to rough out a list of topics right now, just given what we've been talking about. So Tina has something to work with. Peg, I don't know if you're able to do it or if someone there at the table can write these down. But let's start putting that together. And then we can weed it out as we go. This is topics for the community forum housing.
I think I'll throw out number one, I think, is we need to talk about the successes that have already taken place in Garfield County. That's something local people can relate to, and we can learn a lot from what's been done successfully already in Garfield County that we can learn from.
Okay, so regional successful projects.
Yep.
Okay. You had mentioned another one being funding.
Yes, funding.
Okay. Elena, you talked about new building, I think is sort of how you framed that.
Yeah. Okay. I would say new building and then another one being incentives for, renting out existing homes.
Okay, yeah. So is there, I'm thinking of things like performance standards, deed restrictions, community land trusts. Can that all undergo under one heading as possibilities for, making the stuff happen? Or does someone have a better way of framing that than I do?
I think those are going to come up, and I'd rather hear about what, started with the regional successes. How did they do it?
Yeah.
Because those become... Because if they can do it in Escalante, it becomes a model for what's feasible here in Garfield County, what's feasible for a town with small population. So that we can learn a great deal from.
Yeah.
I think that would be, I would lump all that as possible solutions. But, as Lee said, you don't want to start talking too much about specific solutions and getting opposition to an idea before you've got the consensus that we
right.
need something.
Right. That's
the big topic there that we should, the vision of having a diverse population, diverse in terms of ages and career stage, is really, that vision is a big part of it.
Yeah. And I think Lee was really correct. One thing I think we need, and I could perhaps do it, is a big picture view, like a context of what is actually happening here and what we're trying to, why we're trying to get everyone's ideas and how to bring all this to fruition. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Another thing we should put on our topic list is just a review of the existing documents. We've got the old housing report from Boulder. We have the Garfield County Housing Study. I know there's a couple of statewide housing studies, so there's a lot of resource documents out there that we should make sure people in the community know are available, that they can download and read if they want to.
Yeah.
This is Elena. I would suggest, in my mind, I think it makes sense to have, from what we've talked about, have three categories, have them be basically acquiring land, so land trusts and things could fit into that. So acquiring land, incentives for renting out existing homes, and home building. And then I think that the regional successful projects and the funding would naturally fall into those categories. Nice. I think the regional successful projects would each fit into one of those categories. I think that funding would come along with exploring any of those options. And I feel like those are really our three options. Like you mentioned before, there's a big difference between, or not a big difference, there's a difference between workforce housing and people invested in staying here. And I think both are necessary, And I think that those three categories will help come up with solutions for those. I think that perhaps home building, or I think maybe the renting out empty houses might be a good idea for people who are just here working at the backbone for a season. And then I think land ownership is a good idea for people that want to stay.
Okay. Great. I'm going to, I see some people here who've been involved in housing stuff in the past. So I'm just, and I don't want to spend a lot of time with this, but I do want to, I'm going to open it up for public opinion to add to our list in the event you hear us missing anything. So it's going to be 5 minutes. So that's what I don't know. Do I have to go through the formality of that, Peg, or can I just open it up?
You can just open it up. That's fine.
Okay. So if the public has anything they want to add to this list of things they want to see around the affordable housing conversation at a community public forum, Jennifer, looks like you're up.
Hi. Yeah, thank you. Thanks. Big topic. Appreciate all the work that everybody's done. One of the things that I wanted to really support Lee Nelson and also John Durant, and I love all the ideas, but I really think you need the buy-in from the public first, that it's actually something that needs to happen. And one of the things I thought about that was that before you can even get to any of these, I feel like you have to have the buy-in, and some information that would be helpful is some kind of, some data to support the kinds of things that Lee Nelson was talking about. He talked about, they go one and see me in order to have firefighters or teachers or whatever. You want to have those as part of your community. They have to be able to, live here. And we've got some really good, strong data, I think, about what has happened in the last 10, 15 years to people who have left, just the number of houses that are no longer available. So what is the history of housing in Boulder? The number of available of houses that are for rent, what is it compared to what it was? And then some examples of towns and what happened when they don't provide housing, so that this is all part of this, to me, part of the buy-in of like what actually, what is going to happen if this goes on as the trend that we have now, and where does that take us? And I would hope that just the data to educate on why we're even going to talk about this stuff, because I think if we come in with the examples and all that, my personal belief is that they're not ready for that yet. They need to have the buy-in first. And I think that they need information in order to do that. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And I think, that's part of the big picture and the context that in there. And actually John put together a lot of data, or it gave us a link to it, was at a couple meetings ago, and with some of those details. And beyond that, Jennifer, I hope you volunteer to be on the working committee.
Of course. Thank you.
Anyone else from the public before we switch back to the meeting?
Judith would like to speak.
Yeah. It might not be on. You just have to push the button.
First little buttons on
the
screen.
The black, the white one?
Yes.
Yeah. I think there should be some consideration for what I'm calling design standards. If you're going to be doing cluster housing and it's going to be funded with public dollars or investment dollars, a lot of options, prefabricated homes, mobile homes, what do you want to see in terms of permanency in the structures? Thank you, Judith.
Thanks, Judith.
So you're talking about permanency through temporary structure? Is that what I'm getting?
I'm back. I guess the quality of the homes that are being constructed. I mean, if you are an independent individual homeowner or owner to be, there are building codes that you need to conform to. But I think when you start putting in what's quasi-public housing, or supported by state funding, that the guidelines change and become more lenient. And I think the town needs to decide how aesthetically pleasing, if I can use that word.
Yeah, gotcha. And that would, I think, be covered in performance standards at some point. So a little more detail, but we've done that in the commercial performance standards, for example.
It would be similar to what you've done in commercial. Thank you.
Yeah. Dan Pence?
Yeah, I don't have too much to add. You guys are covering it. It's absolutely critical. The post about the not being able to find people to work the school gives us a pretty stark reality check. I just want to mention, Matt, when you were asking the rhetorical question about how much affordable housing do we need, I also want us to include, and maybe in the groups that you're going to set up, rentals that are out there that could be gobbled up anytime if somebody who owns property and is renting, those people are at risk. And we've seen that happen a couple of times, and it could happen again. That's all I got. Great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, everybody. I'm going to go back to our commission meeting. How's our list doing? Feels like a lot, actually. But have we covered all the bases in your mind, commissioners, more or less, to at least as initial start?
Tessa has a comment. She's in the audience here. That's okay, Matt.
Sorry. Yeah.
Tessa Barkin here. I wonder if it would be helpful to also reach out to businesses in town and see how much affordable housing or employee housing they think they actually need, just as like a basis. I think, yeah, they know their needs.
Thanks, Tessa.
Yeah, definitely. And John, you've talked about that as well. Okay, so
maybe with that, just a quick comment, Selena. Maybe with that, we could ask them how much housing they need, and also if there are ways that we could help them have more housing on their own properties. Like, someone mentioned, like potentially housing at the school or something like that. The museum has thought of different options of if they could put some sort of housing there. So maybe we could ask them if there's a way, you know, it can be easier for them without new units being built somewhere in town and needing to find land for that. Maybe it could happen on their own properties, but just can't currently.
Great. And so, you know, my thought is on all these topics, at least in the initial meeting forum, we need to stick with some of the broader ideas. We're going to get into the details, you know, there's no doubt about that as we move forward. But the ideas of, you know, successful projects, of funding, of a context and a big picture, like what are we actually doing here? Why are we doing it? As you said, I think, Elena, existing buildings, acquiring land versus, then there's the rentals and so on. So we have quite a big list. Does that feel like about a place to start from, Tina, in order to create a working group? You know, I'm going to stomp on you before I ask for your answer. But the question is, how long is this forum going to be? 2 hours, 3 hours? How much time do we have? And, you know, how do we want to, you know, I imagine it'll be in the big room in the town council. That's where we did in the town hall. That's where we did the old meetings. And in that scenario, we had speakers. We also had group discussions. And we also had sometimes specific, like, setups of an idea, like a little stand that talked about deed restrictions or something. So there are many ways to play this. And that's part of what the working group's going to need to figure out, like, how do we fit all this together in a specific time frame?
Okay.
Well, Matt, this is Colleen. I think the last forum that we have was 4 to 6 hours, as I remember. I mean, it had to have been, weren't you there? We were, you know, it was like a Saturday, or which I see the meetings are going to be on a Friday, but as I remember, I think we were there from 4 to 6 hours.
I think that was more of an open house, and I think here we're going to be a little more focused.
But I'm just giving you kind of a reference of what the last one was, opposed to maybe what you want and what realistically what you're going to be able to talk to,
right,
in just a couple of hours, opposed to 4 to 6.
Right. Yeah. So realistically, what can we do?
And I also think we should ask, when we come up with different people who would like to have speak, we need to also ask Lee who he's thinking of too. And if they fit within the, anyway. Okay, yeah. I'll just make a list and then I'll pass it around and we can, get it ready for this next meeting.
Do you think it's possible, viable to get a working group meeting in before our next planning commission meeting?
For me, I was actually looking at
the end of August to try and do something as far as a meeting. I guess it's a matter of,
let's see, Dan, can you mute yourself, please? Or whoever is not muted, please mute yourself.
Clarify, are we trying to schedule a meeting for us, or is each of those groups trying to meet before
our next meeting? Yeah, that would be my question too. I guess we need to try and group up in some way.
Let me know how I can support that in helping get the people together and then organizing an actual meeting.
And I think there needs to be something that goes out to the community soon saying that we're working on, and if you're interested in participating, we can, start including those who are interested in, for whatever reason, the participation because of something that they have to share or whatever.
Right. And just technically, we can only have 2 planning commissioners present at those work meetings, so we don't have a quorum. Got that?
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we read our list of topics again, just so that we're all straight on them?
Someone write them down.
Yes. You may want to edit what I wrote, but started with regional success projects that happen like Garfield County or Wayne County nearby anyway. Funding sources, new housing standards versus incentives for creating housing in existing structures. And then I did write down deed restrictions or land trusts, not details, but just what are they?
Yeah, okay.
And we have existing resource documents.
Yeah. What was that again? Existing resource
documents. Just presenting what already exists. So we are, and that probably is as much such that it made available on the web to the public before the meeting. But certainly, we want to make sure anyone who goes to the meeting is aware of what's already been done.
Yes, thank you. And also, I did capture what Jennifer had suggested, which is some research, some data on what if we don't do this.
Right. And so I think part of that, you might include this as, I don't want to use the word the buy-in, but this is the big picture, you know, like the context of what's happening here. Give people somewhere to stand so they know what we're doing.
And I think to clarify, you know, one thing I did mention, but I didn't get on a list is exactly what Matt said. We need to start emphasize this, the big picture vision. What kind of community do we want? How does what we're talking about tie into the general plan that the community has invested a great deal of time and energy into? And then obviously the last topic of it, this is not going to solve all our problems in one meeting, that one of our topics has to be follow-up. What kind of structure, what kind of committees, what kind of workshops do we need after this November 17th meeting? Or how do we carry forward?
Right. Yeah, like creating a timeline off that would be good.
This is Elena. Maybe no one liked this idea, but I'm going to say it again. I like the idea of if we can try to clump the categories into those three categories, I do think it could all fit in those. I think that creating work groups for this many categories and also fitting them all into a potentially 2-hour forum would be challenging. I think if we can, I do think those three topics I mentioned before could be all encompassing. And I would just like to bring that up again. Acquiring land, incentives for renting out empty houses or rooms, and new home building. And I think that within those categories, people could bring regional successful projects within those categories to the table. I think that we could include land trusts and deeds, deed restriction, and I think funding will come along with them naturally. Existing documents can also be included within those categories. And I think 3 is typically a good number to kind of keep things organized and not overwhelming.
So land purchasing, existing housing,
acquiring land.
You send us this.
Acquiring land, incentives for renting out empty houses or rooms, and new home building.
Elena, since there's no one's going to agree, I respectfully disagree because what that's going to do is get us bogged down into details. Oh, we've got this idea, we've got that idea. And I think we really have, for this first meeting, have to start at the big question, because every time these ideas have been around Boulder before, what they always run into is, oh, we don't want that in this town. And a few people are very vocal and they kill it. And I think that's the hard part, and it's really useful. We've got to start with getting a community consensus that affordable housing or locally accessible housing, it's called locally accessible, and also land for small-scale agriculture, those are important, and it's a community goal to achieve that. Yeah. Then you could start talking about the specifics.
Sure, I don't see why these categories can't include that. I think it's definitely true. I think we all agree that we want to get general support from the community, but I do think paring down the list of categories would help you. I guess I don't see a difference in gaining support based on category.
The way I hear, I mean, in a way, you're both right. And I think what work you're talking about, Elena, can be addressed in the big picture, because the big picture is really the general plan, right? And that's framed directly in there. And I think that should be on the list. And I think from here on out, then the working group can come to a decision about what they're going to actually present. So at this point, I want to finish this topic and move on to unless there are any last thoughts, this is your last chance, but I think we have a good start. We have the list of topics. The working group is being assembled, and we'll know more by next round. So thank you, everybody.
Matt, did you want to take any more comments on this from the public at this point?
I'll take final comments at the end, but I'm going to move on now.
Okay.
And so next on our agenda, John, I'm going to turn it over to you for what you've been working on with the fire code and town council and so on.
Point of order here. I think we've been going now for about an hour and a quarter. We've got three big topics coming up. Can we recess for about 5 minutes and let people get a drink of water or whatever they need to do?
Sure. We'll meet back here at 8:30.
Okay.
Okay. Great. That means Peg's back or someone is. Yeah.
John's coming.
Okay. Thank
you. Okay, John. It's all you. Yep.
All right. So we had a request from the town council based on their discussion 2 months ago to provide some greater clarity on the fire hydrant standard. So since that affects the that's part of the subdivision ordinance.
Excuse me. We had a request from the town council 2 months ago to provide greater clarity on fire hydrants. And since that's part of the subdivision ordinance, which is a land use ordinance, that becomes a topic for planning. So that's why we're here. It would be possible for us to simply find that the current ordinances are adequate and recommend no change to the town council. And if somebody wanted to make that motion right now, it wouldn't break my heart. But I think that'd be kicking the can down the road. Okay, well, hearing no intent, no support for saying that we shouldn't make a change, what I've done is I've prepared a draft ordinance with some options for discussion. What I'm hoping we can do in the next 15 minutes or so is go through it. I have a markup copy so I can retype whatever we end up with. But hopefully that we end up with a draft that we could move to a public hearing for September. So that would be the goal I'd like to have.
Great.
I'm hoping that with issues like this, we can come to some final action within 4 to 6 months of the time it first hits us, and we're now 2 months into that process, so we should keep moving it along. So I have a draft of an ordinance regarding fire protection in subdivisions. Whereas the Boulder Town Council wishes to provide greater clarity on the requirements for fire hydrants in new subdivisions, and I added this one because I inadvertently left it out, and whereas public safety is a priority for the town, the mayor made that very clear, and whereas the town general plan has the objectives of promoting farming, ranching, and the conservation of open lands to support agricultural endeavors, and of maintaining diverse community structure by creating housing opportunities for seasonal workers and low to moderate income individuals. And whereas the requirements for fire access roads, fire flow, and hydrant spacing in the 2018 fire code for one and two family dwellings do not consider the circumstances of 5 acre or larger lots, which may be used in part for agriculture, and whereas the Utah Wildland Urban Interface Code requires a water supply within 1,000 feet of the dwelling, and whereas the future location of all future buildings is not known at the time of subdivision, and whereas the applicable codes provide for the fire authority to make certain site-specific interpretations of the requirements, now, therefore, be it ordained by the Boulder Town Council. So have I set the context of why we're doing this? The whereases are acceptable, okay?
Great, yeah, that seems straightforward to me. Well done.
Okay, so now, be it ordained by the Boulder Town Council. Add to section 152.041G3, which has a heading fire protection and suppression requirements, the following wording and renumber as needed. All new subdivision lots shall be within, and I've got it as 400 feet, which is our current wording, of a fire hydrant connected to a water supply meeting applicable fire code requirements. And under options, option one, I point out distances between 250 and 600 feet appear reasonable based on what other jurisdictions in this part of the state have done. Given that a 5-acre lot is 350 or 330 by 660 feet, a hydrant 400 feet from the front of the lot could be about 1,000 feet from a building at the rear of it. So we would still be within the wildland urban interface code.
Right. Yeah, I think that's well done. And also the way that you've worded it here, John, means that does it allow for alternatives to private water supply systems?
Okay, so that is really...
Or am I getting things mixed up? Yep.
Yeah, I think that's it in the next one.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
Under B, the fire authority may increase the allowable distance from a hydrant to lot line based on unbuildable sensitive lands and any legally binding building restrictions indicated on the plat. So if somebody, for example, is saying that this is going to be under an agricultural easement and it's part of the plat, then you'd say, well, you're not going to have a house there, so now you don't have to have a hydrant. So we're leaving that discretion. Then I have the next sentence. The fire authority may allow alternative fire flow and storage where exceptions in the fire code are applicable. If this is incorrect. So the fire, that, and this is what I was talking about earlier. There's a standard NFPA 1142, which is written exactly for conditions like four. Rural firefighting, widely spaced, single isolated homes. So this would allow the fire authority the discretion to say, if you have a system that meets an applicable standard, you could do that. We can either make that wording more explicit or take it out. But that's where that one was that you asked about, the alternative water supplies.
Okay, gotcha.
That's exactly what was done up on Black Mobile Mesa. Small tanks and hydrants. Private system up there that's filled from the wells. This came out of the clear discussion I had with Jim Campbell, that economic hardships should not be considered in determining fire protection requirements and new subdivisions. Otherwise, you have a question of equity. One guy's rich and can afford it, one guy isn't and can't afford it. That probably, since this is a public safety requirement, I think that is not an unreasonable position from Jim Cattell. Then C, this came from a conversation with Elena, the option that the distance requirement in 3A may be waived in the case of subdivisions not requiring construction of new streets, and that should be and served only by private driveways or existing streets, and creating no more than one additional lot. I have mixed feelings about that. I'll let Elena speak in favor of that. And then the last part of the draft ordinance is that we would replace the current wording in standards for all proposed streets, fire hydrants line item as follows. Where feasible, the water supply and fire hydrants shall be located within the street right of way. Alternative routing may be approved by the fire authority provided the necessary easement is recorded as part of the plat. So that would, since that's where the hydrant requirement is now, and it's clearly what is intended, that if you're putting in streets, that's where you should be running your fire hydrants. But I could think of cases where there's a much shorter way to get there, and you know, it's probably good to leave the fire authority the ability to say that the fire water line can come by some other route if necessary. So that's the draft ordinance. Lena, do you want to talk to the options?
I'd like to hear some discussion first.
Being at the town council meeting, this last one, I thought that I'm curious why you left the 400 when Jimmy said that the water company was six. Is that six from the house?
Yeah, that's six from the house.
Okay.
But we don't know where the house is.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I say. Some towns in this in Garfield County actually have 250 feet from a hydrant,
mm-hmm.
but they're the towns that are getting more of the urban type subdivisions,
right.
like Tropic.
Right.
And I think what you said, like John, the way you set it up, 400 from the lot, and if it's a traditional 5-acre lot, that still keeps you within the fire urban code, whatever it is, of 1,000 feet. So.
And did I see a limit? Like if someone had, there were two lots next to each other, could there be one hydrant for both of those lots if it's placed in an appropriate?
Yeah, definitely. Because right now we never have defined where the building footprints are on the lot.
Right.
So all we can do is really say how far from the lot. And if you're clever, you're putting it on a lot line between two lots. Might be the best way to do it.
Right.
A fly lot is something we have not authorized, but in the future could be accommodated by this. But I'm trying to hit a balance for to emphasize the public safety aspect, which is having firefighting water available.
Uh-huh.
Can you scroll down that,
Tina?
No, I can't.
Okay. Could you scroll down?
Where do you want to go?
Right there. That's, okay.
So option two matches the paragraph B.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So any other questions from the commission to John? Additions, subtractions.
Anything future buildings like blah 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 about getting some kind of credit for being proactive in how you build the house and fire retardant sort of object situations, sprinkler systems. There we go. Right.
Yeah, I think that's an option too, right, John?
Especially if we allow the private water supplies as an alternative to hooking up to Boulder Farmstead, because those formulas they give you credit if you've got a sprinkler building, for example, you need less storage.
Uh-huh.
So
and those private water systems are already coded out in the urban wildfire code.
No, they're not. But you've got a number of organizations that write codes. What Utah has adopted statewide is the 2018 International Fire Code.
Mm.
And Boulder has also adopted that by reference.
Okay.
But then you also have National Fire Protection Association, which writes, which would constitute nationally recognized codes. But, unless we put that into the ordinance explicitly, it would be only an advisory document, not a mandatory document. So I'm kind of leaving the way I worded it now leaves a little bit more discretion to the fire authority, but
right.
also the fact that you'd be expected to meet some standard, not just come up with a back of the envelope guess of what you need to do.
Yeah.
I could add to paragraph B, the words of a nationally recognized code.
Mm.
Or we could leave it open. In the way it's worded right now, it sort of implies that it says the fire authority may allow alternative fire flow and storage where exceptions in, and that should probably be a fire code, are applicable.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure if this has been said yet. This is Elena. B and C could both happen at the same time, correct? Like A is different from them, but B and C are not opposing each other.
Right. Yeah. So B is basically saying, for example, if somebody's splitting an ag parcel into two ag parcels,
yeah,
and puts a legally binding thing that you can't build on, then they would not. That would say okay, you don't get a hybrid.
Right. But what I'm saying is, we could pass B and C. We don't have to pick A, B, or C necessarily.
No.
Yeah.
Those are independent.
Great.
And also, when it gets to town council, they would have the. That's their ultimate authority. So we could send it to them after public hearing. And if they don't like it, they could strike
that. Right.
So unless there are any other comments, I think we should, make a motion to pass this to public hearing, or do we just set it there?
I would say I'll make a motion that we take it as corrected to public hearing, and I will get an amended text to Peg so she can get out in plenty of time.
Okay. I'll second that motion. Is there any more discussion or changes that people want before we vote?
Yeah, so I'm a little, okay, this is Colleen. So option one, option two, and option three. Are we picking between those?
That's not part of the ordinance. That's just for our information to discuss.
Okay, I see what you're saying. And so Peg will just scroll up. So then, that above that, that's what we're looking at right now.
A, B, and C, yes.
So whether we leave that as A, or we're trying to decide how we want to. Okay, so I see. Like with Elena, she was looking at B and C, right? Instead of and taking A out. Is that what we're looking at?
No, if the town passes A alone,
okay,
that would basically leave the distance of 400 feet. But clarify that you've also got to be connected to a water supply, which our ordinance, if you read it strictly, says you have to put in a hybrid, but it doesn't say you have to connect it to anything.
I see. Okay. So thank you.
That's what A would do.
Yeah. Okay.
B would give the fire authority, what we used to call a fire marshal.
Yeah.
A little clearer guidance on under what circumstances can exceptions be made.
Yeah. Okay.
And C is very specific to the what we've called minor subdivisions.
Yeah.
And maybe Elena, you could speak in defense of that.
So just to clarify, because I also thought we were choosing amongst the options.
A, B, C, and then you have another set of A, B, C. So I get it now.
I think one, two, three were explaining.
Yeah.
Thank you. The way it's written right now, this is a question for you. If they passed A and C, is the way it's written, is C a clear enough exception to A?
I think it is. It's the same thing as what we had with the private driveways. Part of the reason I put no more than one additional lot is that there's also section of the Urban Wildland Code and also the Fire Code. As you start having more houses on a snow street, you get stricter on fire protection. So it was more tied to your example you gave me that if it's a 10-acre lot, you could put one house on the back and not have to add a hybrid.
Right.
But if you split it into two lots, all of a sudden you have to add a hybrid.
Yeah.
So it's sort of addressing that. In fact, that's what I said there under the option three. It resolved that contradiction.
Yeah. So you think the language of C is clear enough that if they both get passed, because A says all subdivision lots. So you think if C gets passed as well, it's a clear enough exception.
Yeah, I wrote it the way ordinances are usually commonly written, that you say you've got a requirement, but it can be waived under these circumstances.
Okay. And do we feel like we want to decide what our recommendation is to town council? I feel like typically we send them what we think is best rather than options. Like we discuss the options and send them something to approve.
The options would get structured from what goes to town council.
Say that again.
Yeah, the options are just for our discussion today, and what will go to public hearing will be the written ordinance above that, where after before end of draft ordinance.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is not what goes to town council.
Okay, I apologize.
Yeah, but we do.
So we are choosing.
Yeah. Well, no. We're we've at this point we've set the public hearing from this point to this point, actually.
Yeah. And depending on what happens in the public hearing, we'll, you know, discuss and vote to send it to town council or not next round, so, or amend it.
Right now, we're just deciding on the public hearing.
We're just deciding on the public hearing. So that's the motion that's on the table. So I want to,
To explain the reason for putting the options in is if we make a substantive change after public hearing, we have to go through public hearing again. Whereas if something's listed as an option and it goes to public hearing and then we decide to take it out, because public hearing is over, we don't want it.
Yeah.
We don't have to go back to a public hearing on a revised ordinance.
Right.
Okay. But yeah, if we're just voting on that, then I feel good to move forward and I don't feel like I need to give my opinion at this time.
Okay, let's move towards a vote then. All in favor of sending this to public hearing in September, Matt Cochran, aye.
Andy Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
John Grant, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Okay, thank you, John.
Thank you for clarifying all of you.
Next on the agenda, and hopefully, well, John, it's sort of back to you. I'm not sure what exactly is under the town council sort of ordinances report, but let's see if we can keep it brief so we can spend a little more time on the ZA planning protocol and then sign out.
Yeah. I see Elizabeth is here, so I definitely will want her to add to what I say. So At the last town council meeting, Jim Catmull proposed changing the road width standards, which are very inconsistent and don't make a lot of sense. So it's a good idea, but Elizabeth again pointed out that road standards are part of land use, which makes it a planning issue. The problem we have a little bit is that we didn't really get a clear chart on what they want us to look at. Is it just road? I think it is just road width. So I've suggested to Elizabeth that it'll really help us if these things come up on council, if she can, as our liaison, can make sure that the town council minutes are clear as what the charge is being given to the planning commission. So given that we're not sure what our charge is, we probably don't have much to work on this, on roads this month. Elizabeth, could you maybe add?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I agree. I think having a more clear, concise information from town council to planning commission, and I can bring that up at the next meeting and work on that as one thing. The second thing is, I believe you're correct, John, that when Jim Capnell brought that up, it was just the width, and I would have to go back into my notes or go back and re-listen to the meeting to say that for sure. But I just brought up that it wasn't something that we needed to discuss and it wasn't something we could change, that it needed to go to the proper channel. And so the town council agreed to send it to planning commission to look at that in our ordinance as the road widths and what they should be in comparison. I don't think that there was much more clarification of what was being asked of you, other than I brought up that it's not something we could do because it is in your jurisdiction and needed to go through planning commission, then public hearing, and then up to town council. And I apologize that I don't know more about that. And I can look that up and get the town council to put it on our next agenda and have it more fine-tuned of what we're asking for and then send it to you for the next month if that is preferred.
That would be great, Elizabeth. I think we just need a specific directive so we know what we're supposed to be doing.
Excellent.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
Yep.
Can I also add, this is Tina, that there is a, you know, there's the surface of the road and there's the available width of, you know, access, which is different. So he said 18 feet, I believe. And the fire department has been asking for 20. So there are some clarity things that maybe could be passed on to the town council just for, you know, to help in defining what they want us to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a contradiction that our subdivision standards require a wider road than almost any road in town, including the Lower Boulder Road and the road here in front of the town hall. But as Tina's right, there's the drivable surface, sort of the cleared path, which would be the area you could park along the side of the road. And then what Jim was talking about is also the total right-of-way, which the town has been going with 60 feet for the right-of-way of the road, which is what the town would hold. Would could take utility lines and all that. But I think that, you know, I think his intent was to define the width of town roads consistently and be more in line with our current practice, which would keep the rural feeling of the town.
Great.
Okay, electronic, was that something you wanted to cover?
That's really a matter entirely for the town council. I was doing that basically as a favor to Judy Drain.
Okay.
Just authorized us to do what we've already been doing.
Okay. Great. Thank you, John. Anything else?
No, I think we're ready to talk zoning administrator.
Okay. So next on the agenda, I haven't actually gotten a chance to read this piece. Somehow I didn't get it. But so, John, will you just give us the basic context and we'll go from there?
Okay, so the issue that's been brought up, or actually two issues. One was that April's not physically in town, and the implication was, well, she can't do her job because she's not in town to do certain things. The other one was a vague generality that there were some complaints regarding her response times. So what I did is I went through all the Boulder ordinances and looked at everything it says the zoning administrator has to do. And every item turns out to be examining submitted documents, determining whether those documents indicate that the project will comply with the ordinance, and then issuing permits and written findings. There are no zoning administrator duties that explicitly require physical presence at the project site. It was brought up, well, she needs to be measuring setbacks. No, that's not in the ordinance. There was one mention to measuring setbacks, and it was in the context of reviewing applications.
Okay, so it lives up to its name. It's an administrative job.
So the zoning administrator has extensive responsibilities that involve making determinations of fact, and has the authority to approve building permits and temporary use permits. On-the-job experience and suitable work or educational training are needed to carry out the duties. The essential skills are the ability to understand and apply detailed rules and ordinances, maintain documentation, and communicate findings in writing. Having an inexperienced or unqualified person act as zoning administrator could put the town at risk of both approving improper projects and litigation if somebody's project is denied improperly. Under the town ordinance, so then came the question, well, who does check setbacks? Right. Under the town ordinance, the county building inspector has been delegated the authority to do on-site inspections. And that generally includes inspecting the building footings prior to pouring the concrete. I looked at the wording that's in our existing ordinance, and I believe it includes delegation to inspect for compliance with Boulder ordinances. But that could be clarified if it's needed. So it's a little bit vague, but my reading of it is that he's got the authority to issue a stop work if it's a violation of a Boulder ordinance, not just a building code issue.
Okay.
Regarding response time, April O'Neill, like all town officers and staff, works part-time. Even large cities with multiple full-time planning staff allow a reasonable time to respond to inquiries. For example, the Salt Lake City website states, We strive to respond to all inquiries within 24 hours. However, due to the high amount of email and phone calls we've been receiving, it may take longer. We apologize if you do not receive a response within 24 hours and we'll respond as quickly as we can. So I think when we have a part-time employee, taking 2 to 3 days to make a respond is not at all unreasonable. Salt Lake requires making an appointment if you want to have a meeting with planning staff, and they schedule those meetings only once a week. So if on Friday you want a meeting with the planning staff, you're going to wait till the next Thursday.
Yeah.
So I think expectations that emails will be answered within 2 or 3 days and that at least a week will be required to examine any application are reasonable given the realities of a small town with part-time support. So what I'm really urging us to do is to recommend to the town council that April is doing a good job. She's invested a lot of time coming up to speed. I think you've written that letter, and I think it'd be nice if what you said in your letter to the town council was endorsed by the entire planning commission. And then to support April, I think we if she wants to come up with some guidelines on times for submittals and formatting of submittals, I think we would certainly back her up if she did things like saying that you need to submit all your documents at once. You can't submit your documents one at a time over 3 weeks and then expect me to keep track of where we are.
Right.
Yeah. So that's sort of my recommendation or research on the zoning administrator question.
Thank you. And so what do you think needs to, I mean, maybe you just said it, but what do you think needs to, what are the next steps to take from your research here?
Well, see, do you have your letter that you sent to town council? It'd be good to for us as a planning commission to go on the record that we all support that.
I don't know, Peg, I don't know if you have a copy of it via email or?
Not that I can access, I'm sorry. Not in
my. I can get it out, John. I don't have it available at the moment.
You could just say in general what, and then we could take a motion to endorse what you just said. So it's not just you. The whole commission.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that, and you think that would go to the mayor, town council.
Yeah.
Well, I think also what you said just clarifies the confusion I think we could just go with what you said, you know, as a full commission. I think it covers most of it, doesn't it? What you said, right, Matt?
I think, you know, I just said less data-based things, basically saying that, you know, April is, you know, the teamwork with the zoning administrator is vital for all of us, and it's in working order right now. And because it's primarily an administrative job, it can be done remotely. And that we can figure something else out for whatever on site, which, by the way, since in the last year, there hasn't been anyone needed on site for any of the zoning administrator, the projects that have come up even. So anyways, I suppose I'm basically saying the same thing, Tina.
Okay, to come to closure, how about this? If we add a final sentence that says that we send this white paper basically as a report on the zoning administrator to the town council.
I think that's great.
A sense that says that the planning commission supports continuing having April work remotely as zoning administrator, but has no objections to appointing a local assistant or deputy.
I don't think that's needed.
Okay.
I think that if there needs to be someone, I mean, it's basically under the councilman who's actually making sure that if there is a discrepancy, they go and say something about that. Okay. And I
believe too that, you know, you said it in your research here is the county. Yeah. The county inspector will be called in if someone needs help, you know, about their land. I'm happy as a planning commissioner to go out and tell them what I know, but I'm not qualified as a county inspector.
Okay, so So I guess, Peter, you're saying we don't really recommend having a local assistant, but would it be appropriate to say that members of the planning commission would be available if an on-site inspection is needed or on-site meeting is needed, because we're not doing inspections, we'd be.
Yeah, if, I mean, I'm available. I can't speak for everyone else, but yeah.
I would be, you know.
So there's one section in our rules. It's one that I found, 152.099, that subdivision construction improvement inspection. That seems to be something that the town could require, but it doesn't necessarily, isn't a zoning administrator position, but there is an improvement inspection. So if they want to, you know, appoint somebody who inspects what's going on here in the town, then they could do that as somebody who's willing to go out and inspect any improvements or.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's great, Tina. I think that's great. That sounds legit to me.
Well, 152.009.
I just think it's important to separate those duties from zoning administrator to building inspector. That's all. Yeah.
I like your idea of letting the town council member who's in charge of enforcement be the one.
Yeah.
Who, if there's a question about on the ground, that's all
their job.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
So do we need to make a motion to pass this to the town council then, John?
I think that would be good. It sounds to me, what I didn't put in deliberately because I didn't feel it was my job, was what our recommendation as the planning commission to the town council is. I think we definitely want to recommend keeping April on.
Yes.
Right, and I think we can leave it at that.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, and via Elizabeth, if there are questions about, well, how are we going to handle other questions, we can figure out how to deal with that or discuss with the town council meeting. There are questions about what we just talked about, enforcement, subdivision inspections. All right. So, okay, I'll make a motion that with the recommendation to keep April on, we send this as a report of the planning commission as a letter from the planning commission to the mayor and town council.
I'll second that motion. Any last discussion? All right, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Lynn Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
John Barath, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Okay, winding down. Next on the agenda, upcoming business for September.
Are you going to do final comments first?
We're going to do those after upcoming business, just because that's the way it is on the agenda, I think. Mm-hmm. So, upcoming business, there's always the possibilities of Deer Ranch and Fogle Fuller, but not until we get the paperwork. Number two would be, update on community housing forum and working group. What else?
Public hearing.
Oh, thank you. Public hearing on the fire ordinance. Yep. What else can we tackle?
So I'm kind of wondering if we're going to get back to the subdivision ordinance with Lee. Some of the things that seems to have kind of dropped off. I know that it all goes hand in hand with housing. But so are we just kind of working on this section of it before we go back to subdivision?
Yeah, my understanding is the reason we're going through all this, Colleen, is to be transparent, get public comment, so we can sort of steer the most viable way to go forward with the subdivision ordinance.
I would like to, yeah, okay.
Does everyone agree with that or not?
Yeah, I think, you know, the subdivision ordinance, Leah's right. We probably would be best off starting with a clean sheet of paper and writing a new subdivision ordinance. And to do that, we really need to understand, do we want to continue our past practice of encouraging 5-acre lots on good farmland, or do we want to have a completely different approach that's more consistent with our general plan? And that's really what I think this housing forum and the follow-up meetings will be about.
Any other comments on that, commissioners? All right. So if there's nothing else.
Matt, I have one thing to note. Just for everybody to know, I'm going to be out of town from September 1st through September 6th. And our meeting is on the 8th, I believe. So okay. I'm going to try to get an agenda, of course, the minutes, any supporting documentation I need out by the last few days of August. I mean, okay. it'll probably be tentative. We could make some changes to it, but I need to get everything out. I will not be accessible but to do any work by computer where I am.
Okay. And I'll work with you on that those last few days of August.
Okay.
Thank you, Peg. Okay, I'm going to open up the floor for a final public comment. If you have any comments, we'd like to hear them.
Jennifer?
Hi, I'll be quick. Thank you so much, John, for really examining the assumptions that the town council had made about the zoning administrator following up, because it turns out the assumptions were made that weren't accurate, and then you got to actually address those. Following on with that, I listened to the last town council meeting, and you wanted some direction from the town council about the fire hydrant and those issues that you talked about. And just as a community member, citizen listening in, I really didn't feel like that they gave a direction. That I felt like it was dominated by just one voice, and I didn't even hear some of the town council members give their opinion on it. And I just was kind of concerned. Maybe they all agree, but I felt like that maybe when you're looking for direction, this is just like, I don't know how you would achieve this. It's just an idea, but you know, if you're looking for direction, there needs to be some kind of accountability from each of the town council members that they are agreeing with whatever it is that they're putting forth. And I just didn't feel like that happened at that last meeting. And here we are making an ordinance, which you guys put all that time into. And thank you, John, your detail on this is really appreciated. But I just, as a community member, I just came away thinking, I just didn't feel like there was consensus. Like I didn't hear that, but that just could be me. So anyway, that was just a comment that if you're looking for direction, I think there needs to be some way to actually have accountability. That's what you got from the whole town council. Okay, that's all. Thank you very much for all your work.
Thank you, Jennifer. Let's see, Donna Owen.
Let me unmute myself. First, I appreciate everything everyone's doing. I do think sometimes things aren't being seen from all angles. A lot of presumptions are being made. But that being said, I see a lot of positivity too. I do want to ask John on the subdivision fire hydrants. Did you take into account the fact that we have legal clustering ordinance and that would be 2.5 acre lots? Do you feel like the measurements are still accurate for that situation? And I know you can't answer, but I'm just saying before you guys, I know I can put this public comments next month, but it'll already be passed whether I say anything or not. Maybe you want to take the month to think about these things. And then I also feel like, why do we, in one hand, talk about affordable housing and incentives for clustering, and then on the other hand, we make it really, 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 really hard. Put everything on the developer, the people who are living here in town. It's not just some big bad meanie from outside. every time. Okay, we need to understand that. There are people here who really have, you know, anyway, not to get too personal because we may be coming before you soon. So I don't want to say too much, but on that subdivision ordinance, I still not quite sure why a minor, which we do not have minor subdivisions, but why a small subdivision would not need fire protection. I can see why not requiring them to have the full big, huge road, but I don't understand why they should be exempt from fire hydrants. It seems, you know, a little discriminatory to me. Sorry, just does. I didn't hear a reason why. I just heard we should just do this. And there's a couple other things I would love to say, but I can't. And except that I do have one email. I'm still waiting from April for a month. So 2 to 3 days is fine. 2 to 3 weeks, maybe not. Not sure she got it. Never know. Put those things out there and maybe you get an answer. Maybe you don't. You all are not on our end where we can't talk to you. We are not allowed to speak to the planners about it. Only allowed to talk to April, but she doesn't talk. She only does email. And so we're very reliant upon getting those answers. Okay, just so that you understand. And I better be quiet and thank you all again before I get myself in trouble. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. Any other final comments?
Not seen any other hands. Could I just say, because I may be one of the people who communicates most frequently with April, and most of our communication is via email. I personally, I've had some of my emails bounce or things that I thought went, didn't go. I simply recommend, I think email's a little flaky on all of our systems here and there sometimes. I strongly recommend following up like a day after you send an email, send another one and just say, I sent this, did you receive it? I think people need to do more follow-ups on email, quite frankly, across the board, generally speaking, forever, all of us.
Great, thanks, Peg. So here ends the August 11th Planning Commission meeting. Thank you everybody for showing up, appreciate it.
Before we stop.
Did someone,
okay.
I didn't hear any motions to adjourn.
Before we close, I'd like to make a couple of quick, I don't think we need a motion or business side, but Donna made a very good point. I had not really considered that, you know, how this wording would apply to smaller lots. With the commission's permission, I will make sure that what goes to public hearing has some indication that at least that we're accepting comments on the appropriateness of using a different limit based on the lot size.
That'd be great.
The other one, this is tricky, and I think we should probably put it on the agenda if we for next month, is, you know, Donna saying, well, I can't talk to the commissioners. Well, she actually can, and she does. She's spoken to me more than once. But, you know, we could possibly consider allowing the equivalent of a second conceptual discussion. If there's something that a proponent wants to discuss after they've had the conceptual plan meeting, but before they are ready to submit a full preliminary application, I could see maybe that we can allow that within the current policies and ordinances. So something we might want to think about. If there is a lack of communication, that we can help citizens function better since we don't have full-time staff.
Yeah, I agree. Would you like that as a discussion next month?
Yeah, let's put that as an actual discussion item for next month. You know, improving communication between citizens and the planning and zoning administrator. Just, you know.
Yeah. Do you get that?
There's nothing appropriate for citizens. We need to make that clear.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would be something that's never been attended to. So, All right. I'm going to make a motion to close the meeting.
Second.
Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Jenny Hughes, aye.
John Brath, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Great, thank you, everybody. Good night.
All right.
Good.